Hi there, and welcome to Backstage at Microsoft Architect Insight 2010. It's a real great delight and pleasure to have with me here Ivar Jacobsen, the father of the Rational Unified Process, who has a great history in IT and the industry over the years. And so it's a great pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you.
I guess that's, for me, is a great place to start. I mean, you still amaze me in terms of the work that you produce and the inspiration you create in the industry. But this is a long history. It's an ever-changing industry as well. The initial work around the Rational Unified Process, is that still relevant today, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the ideas in RUP were, many of them were good. I mean, the way you do start with use cases or user stories or whatever, and you end up in tested executable code is still very important. The way you do architecture is still important, even if there are many ideas on how to do it lighter today than when people did in the past. Still very important. Component-based development is very important. So we have many good ideas in RUP that are now have not really been successful in all aspects. With successful ideas, but not deploying. It's very hard to deploy RUP. So that is some problem we have approached and made very different solution to. And that has happened the last couple of years.
Right.
So one of the things we actually, just to give you an idea, is that we we changed from thinking about the big process into practices. So the big process was replaced by a number of separate practices that you could, in one way or the other, merge together. And that's where you deal with one practice at a time, introduce one practice at a time. And that has been very effective. And you don't need to take a revolutionary step introducing a new process. And the practices, they come from all around the world. It's not only from unified process where they come from. I mean, extreme programming has some practices, test-driven development, just as an example. It comes from other places too. And you have, for instance, Scrum as a project management practice, which is essentially is. And so we have practice coming from all around the world. And you can compose them, and that way you create the methodology.
So this is what's covered by this concept of CMAT, if I understand you correctly.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to go into that specifically right now, but CMAT is kind of this reflection on the process is one thing, but the practices are the kind of, I guess, the realization of any processes. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
And by actually having more robust practices, we can deliver better software. Is that?
Yes. And actually, you don't. Every company has, big company has many methodologies. And just as an example, Fujitsu is one of the people who really worked and developed their way of thinking about software. They had about 30 different methodologies, which we have now been able to separate. So we separate out the practices in these methodologies so we can start to compare. I don't claim they have done it for all, but they have at least now a strategy where they can, for every methodology, identify the practices, and then they can compare methodology, because it's not possible to compare methodologies. They are so different terminology, different vocabulary, and different ideas that are slightly different, but you cannot really see what is the real difference. So by separating out the method and identify the practices in each method, you can start to compare methods. And you can decide, this is a good idea in that method. I want to take that to my team.
So by extracting the practices from methods, you can then compare the methods, i.e. you're comparing the practices, is that?
Yeah, by comparing practices.
Right, okay.
And you can also change in a very smaller way, instead of changing and adopting a new methodology, whatever it is, Scrum or whatever, RUP, you can now adopt one practice at a time. So you don't change your existing methodology completely. Use the things you address, the problems, the biggest problem, take one practice to fix that problem. That could be dealing with requirements and tests, for instance. Mm. Okay? So we have problem with requirements and tests. Well, here is the medicine. Here is a practice that is good on dealing with requirements all the way to test.
So this feels to me like some sort of interoperability kind of capability or a way to take practices that are tied to different methodologies and to look across the life cycle, let's say, I guess everything comes back to that, and apply, whether using one methodology or another, but apply practices from different methodologies that fit your requirements, give it be the nature or the nature of the organization or the nature of the solution you're trying to drive. Is that what you're saying here, that by taking an approach like this, you can adopt the best of breed practices across the life cycle given a particular situation?
The advantage is this. A big company can start to understand which methodology they have. The old approach was this. You try to roll out, many companies try to roll out RUP all over the organization. Mm-hmm. And many have failed because really it's a very hard thing to really do. And so that is the too much governance. On the other hand, by having a little governance, so they actually know what is going on in the different product groups or in the company, they can start to move people from one organization to the other. That was very, very hard. So from a developer's perspective, I would be much more useful if I can... If I can move from one organization to the other quickly, instead of having to learn a complete new methodology, I just learn a couple of practices. From a company perspective, you can get reuse in a way, not only reuse of, you can reuse people, of course, that is a negative way of talking about people, but it's actually very important to be able to take people and move from one organization to the other. You can reuse technology, you can reuse tools, you can reuse so much that is you were not possible before.
Yeah.
So what we are also addressing is the whole education system, because universities have been not very brilliant, in to say the least, in teaching software engineering. If they teach it at all, they teach one methodology, one instance of a method.
I know that.
And people come out, they have learned one method, and they come into the company, and they have no generic knowledge about software engineering, or almost nothing. So this is another problem we address. We want the education to be finding a more generic way of learning. It's not about a unified method, absolutely not. On the contrary. We don't believe in one single method. We believe there will be lots of methods, even more in the future than today. However, these methods will be collected or composed by composition practices. Mm-hmm. But so the number of practices will not be, overwhelming. But if you think about it today, we have probably 10,000 methodologies out there. And there is no way we can really reuse and learn from one another, because it's such a mess.
So those practices are locked into the methodology. So by extracting them, you're allowing them to become reusable. That fascinates me. I mean, just to drill down in terms of what does a practice, is there a construct for a practice? You know, does it ever start, middle, and an end to it? Or how does it? Because it obviously needs to be practical. It needs to be very usable. A low cost of entry to anybody picking up a practice. Is there a sort of a, I don't want to say a method to that, but is there a kind of a structure that we
can say is there a practice to adopt practice?
And a practice is well structured, I guess
there is one, even if we don't have it documented. But basically, the entry point is changing, because first of all, we believe that the whole methods, big methods, are history. Mm. Because instead, a method will be a composition of practices. Okay,
yes.
Practices are smaller, reusable things. Second, these practices have to be deployed in a very different way in the past. In the past, we tried to describe everything we knew about the practice, but that doesn't work. People really don't read a lot of documentation. I mean, just to give you an example, in RUP, I think we had 300 to 500 pages about use cases. We tried to collect everything we knew that was good about use cases. And that's a lot from an expert point of view. But if no one reads it, it doesn't help. So what we are now focusing on a completely new user experience. So people should approach a methodology in a completely different way than we did in the past. And for that, we have, we use CORS to describe a practice. Instead of 300 pages, 20 CORS, something.
Yeah.
And these CORS you teach in a couple of hours, or let's say 1 or 2 days. And then afterwards, people can work. So we focus on the essentials. And if people have understood the essentials, they can figure out the rest themselves. That's the key.
They can apply it to the situation.
Yeah, they can apply it.
They can execute on it and apply it. Now, that is...
So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. And the other problem we really want to address, too, is the gap between what the process says and what people do. So people are asked to follow a particular process, but they don't do it. So instead, what we want is to... This gap should disappear. So what people really do is the process.
Mm.
And of course, we can say, when you look about what they're doing, we can say this can be improved and we can explain, but that gap needs to be removed.
So I'm not sure I'm on page there. So so if we are looking at the practice, then you're saying that is what we do, therefore that is the process. So are we sort of, in the end, are we just calling the process and practice? You're getting away from the process because it's a word that's created problems in the past, but aren't you saying the same thing? What's different here? I accept that practice was the real thing that we do, and it was the bare bones, the essentials, and absolutely that makes a lot of sense. But then if that creates process.
So the fact is, if you go back to how we described and taught people how to develop software, we taught them a method or a methodology or a process. It's basically a synonym, these words. And a method is basically a soup of many practices. If you are more positive, you could say it's a cocktail of practices, okay? But you cannot really separate out the different practices. A practice is typically something that logically hangs together. So, for instance, it's very easy to understand that if you do requirements and you design them, you code them and you test them, and you deploy them. But if you then say, well, that's not enough, I also need to have error handling practice. And if you merge these two things and describe it together, you get something that describes two different logically unrelated things. Mm. And there are a whole bunch of these, configuration management is another thing. And if you try to take all these things and describe your method, it becomes a mess. If you also want to integrate agile patterns, work patterns, and describe every time you say, we're going to do a workshop, you describe that in combination with all the other practice, it becomes a soup and it grows with a product. Every method grows with a product of a practices, not with a sum of a practices. And that makes that's a really underlying reason why methods are so complex to teach.
Yeah.
Even the simple ones, like extreme programming, because it actually consists of a number of practices.
Yeah. And you're saying people would sit within these practices, or would they span, an individual practitioner, would they sit within a practice or span several, or would they have, a toolkit of...
You have to have a number of practices. Yeah. The thing is that they understand one at a time.
Yeah.
And they can discuss and communicate one at a time. And usually the problem we have to deal with is not the green field, where we say, now we're going to build the most beautiful new product. The problem we deal with is that you already have a product you have been working with for maybe 10 years, and now you need to improve the way you work with it. Then you cannot throw out how people are working completely. You can say, I mean, we have a problem here. For instance, a typical is we have to move from waterfall development to iterative development. That can be done without you basically changing anything else or what you do. You create the same artifacts, but you do it in an iterative way instead of waterfall. So that's a typical practice. And it's practical because you add it, remove something in the existing methodology, and add something. And you don't really need to touch the rest. You don't even need to describe what you do.
So they're self-contained in that sense. I mean, this has a lot of parallels with service orientation or kind of capability mapping. You know, if we think about enterprise architecture itself, I mean, maybe there's lessons we could learn at that.
Well, there's a real big difference, I have to tell you.
Right, okay.
Because service-oriented architecture, enterprise architecture, all about finding component architectures. It's a lot about interfaces. It's about finding services that are basically complete in itself with interfaces. Mm. You may have a service bus. So you can
we recognize nothing lives in splendid isolation, so they must connect.
So you have an architecture, and these things are related. Practices are a different kind of animal. I mean, we had that kind of, when we designed RUP, we had actually these kinds of components. So we had a component for doing requirements, a component for doing design, a component for doing testing, and so on. And we had maybe 7-8 components like that. The problem with that approach is, when it comes to methodology, is that if you only take requirements, you can do the best requirements in the world, but without the other components, it's not useful.
Yeah.
And that's really a problem. Whereas a practice is something, it's more like a use case.
Right,
so it has a clear beginning and an end. And if you want the beginning of a use case, you want the end too.
Yes.
And if you want to do requirements, you want to know, how do I design these requirements? How do I code for these requirements? How do I test for these requirements?
So a practice does typically span the full lifetime. It doesn't. Can practices sit at one end or in between? Could they span partial lifespan, or is it that a practice typically is end to end?
I would say good practices are end to end.
Right. Okay. That's it.
So, whereas
you know, could slot practices in and reuse practices from other, you know, from other disciplines, and so I had this feeling that there's the life cycle, and I'm plugging in practices along the life cycle. But now you seem to be saying that it's
well. What you can do is extensions. So you can, and if I talk, basically the way we do it is we use aspect thinking, separation of concerns. So you can have one concern is dealing with requirements all the way to test. Another concern is I want to do component-based development.
Yeah.
Third concern is I want to do iterative development and so on.
Right, right. Okay, I know.
So you can then compose. And the like composition kind of mechanism is not trivial in any way. Mm. It's really it really requires a lot of thinking. So back to the CMAT initiative, we discovered...
CMAT stands for?
Software Engineering Method and Theory.
Right.
It's something we started... actually, it was funded by Bertrand Meyer, who is the father of Eiffel, Richard Soley, who is the chairman of Object Management Group, you know, UML and all that, and me. And we founded it in September last year. We have not really worked hard to get more and more members, but we have 1,000 members, and we have 32-33 signatories, meaning people who are well known in the industry, have created something. We actually have a Microsoft guy there, Sam Guggenheimer, and actually one more soon. We have we have Ken Schwaber, we have Bob Martin, we have Watts Humphrey, the father of CMMI. So it's people who have contributed
that's
to something.
That's a great list.
Yeah, it's a great list.
Yes.
And we have 11 corporate signatories. It's big companies who actually we treat as customers of the initiative. So we really want to make them happy. We also have a research computer scientist, because we really think it's fundamentally important to have a research community to have something to put their teeth in and make improve. Whereas through this initiative, we tell them in an understandable way, for them, understandable way, what is it that the industry needs. So, I mean, we have many stakeholders who are interested in this.
That's amazing. I mean, the list that you just shared there is. I guess we have to prep for the keynotes this afternoon, so I guess we're going to have to kind of come to an end. Whereabouts can we go to find out more information on CMAT?
We can go to the website. That is www.cmat.org. And there you find blogs, you find papers, position papers, and you find vision statement, where are we going, the industry, and things. So it's a lot of things you can learn from.
And absolutely.
And also contribute. If you're interested, you can contribute.
Yeah. Well, it takes the community to contribute to these things. You mentioned there's so many methodologies out there that really it's about providing or ability to leverage those, given whatever practice you want to end up establishing.
So, I mean, what I want to say at the end is basically, there are many people that believe this is the biggest step that has happened in the software industry in 40 years. Mm-hmm. Last time something as big as this happened in when it comes to software engineering was 1968, when the NATO conference appeared. So it's a really big step, and it's all about what we'll make of it. But I feel very positive. We'll see results within 12 months that will make the industry feel they really get something of value out of it. It's not only the industry that wins. The developers will have a lot of value out of it, because they don't need to go this zigzag path between different fashions. You know, yeah. 1 year it's a couple of years ago it was all about XP, yeah. And a year ago it was about Scrum, and now it's about Lean. Mm. And you know, they are all good things, but none of them have it all. So
no, we can't carry on relearning or learning new skills.
And it's so frustrating for people sitting out there working and working in one development. They cannot move because they don't have the expertise that is used in another team. Yeah. They have to start at freshman. The research community sitting there don't know what the industry needs. So there is a big gap. We have so many gaps.
And back to education, higher education, universities, schools. You know, absolutely. No, this is fantastic, and I'm really glad to hear that Microsoft's involved at least some level in the community to drive
both
this
a signatory, corporate signatory too.
Absolutely.
So not only
I know the name. Absolutely. Yes. That's great news, and I wish you all success with that.
Thank you. We need we need luck too, not only hard work.
That's right, but a judgment as well. And so I think you certainly have a good group to be working with, and I look forward to the talk you do later at Insight, and we'll certainly be filming that, and that'll be available on our site. That's at www.microsoft.com/UK/AIC2010. So it'll be up there in the lights, so make sure that you share it with your colleagues, and feel free to share it on the CMAT site itself.
Absolutely will.
But pleasure talking to you as always, and thanks again.
Thank you.